Welcome to Beyond the Uniform with Justin Asiri, where I interview a veteran of the armed forces about their civilian career. And my guest for this episode, number 36, is Nicole Schwegman.
Instead of complaining about what I can't do because I'm in the Navy, I decided, what can I do to help the Navy? How can I be the change that I want to see? Because if everyone leaves and says, oh, I'm gonna get out and then start my own company or be able to use my own MacBook and have better IT stuff, well, I hate to break it to you. It's not that easy. You have all types of little, what I call irritants. Just like you have irritants in the Navy, there are irritants in other organizations. You're just trading one set of irritants for another. That doesn't mean you shouldn't get out, but don't expect that you won't get irritants. And I've learned to deal with those a lot better.
Nicole is a classmate of mine from the Naval Academy. Since starting Beyond the Uniform, she has been a huge source of help in thinking about how to refine and grow the show. The top reasons to listen to this episode are, number one, perspective. Nicole served in the Navy for 6 years before transitioning to the civilian world, where she worked in a variety of roles, including Deloitte Consulting. She then returned to the Navy, where she is currently on active duty. This provides a unique perspective of someone who has been to the other side and back, and how that has influenced her view on working in the military. Number two, industry fellowship. Nicole is an industry fellow with USAA, which means the military is granting her 1 year to work at a great company and bring best practices back to the military community. She talks about this program and what it's like working at a company that is consistently ranked as the best customer service in America. And let's dive in. See what I did there? I made a little submarine reference to my conversation with Nicole Schwegman. All right. Well, joining me today from San Antonio, Texas, is Nicole Schwegman. Nicole, thanks for joining me.
Thanks. I'm really excited to be here today.
So for listeners, I wanted to give a quick background on Nicole. She is an industry fellow with USAA and is currently on active duty in the U.S. Navy. She started out at the Naval Academy as part of what I believe people are calling the finest class ever to graduate, the mighty class of 2002, which I'm also a part of. After which she served as a surface warfare officer for 4 years and then a public affairs officer, which means that she has spent a lot more time prepping people for these sorts of interviews and doing these sorts of interviews than I have. She left the Navy for the first time back in 2008, and she worked at a small PR firm and then as a contractor for Deloitte and then as a communications partner for Gallup. She returned to active duty in 2010 after a deployment to Afghanistan, moved to San Diego and deployed on two different surface ships, and then got a master's degree in journalism and media studies at San Diego State. Her most recent job with the Navy was chief of media for Navy National News Desk, and she's currently a military fellow at USAA. So, Nicole, to start off, anything to add or correct from that background?
I just want to clarify the name of the program that I'm in is Tours with Industry. And I say that so that if anyone on active duty in the Navy is interested in that program, they'll know what to ask their detailer for. But otherwise, you nailed it.
Oh, thanks. Well, let's actually start off with that. So what is this Tours program and what is your work like with USAA?
Well, so last year in 2015, the Secretary of the Navy wanted to run a test pilot where he sent five naval officers out, I think he said two to FedEx and three to Amazon, to work with those companies for a year. I think some of them were pilots. I think one was HR. And they wanted to see how it went. Now, I will tell you that the Air Force and the Army have been doing this for some time. So the Navy, while we haven't done it a lot, once we decided to do that, we went full force. So that test pilot went really well. This year, there's 37 of us across the country at places like Apple, LinkedIn. There's two of us at USAA. And our purpose is to, one, come into industry, take a year off, learn about what corporate America is doing, find out what those best practices are, and bring those back to the Navy. But the second thing is that we also are representatives of the United States Navy. You know, Justin, not a lot of people have a direct contact to someone who's served in the military. In fact, I think it's less than 1% of folks will ever serve. So believe it or not, at USAA, it's just about 25% veteran, and that includes military spouses. So there's a 75%, there's 75% of people who have never served or maybe have met someone in the military. And their goal is to be a provider of choice for the military community. So that was amazing to me. And that's another reason why this program is something I'm really proud to be a part of.
That's great. I mean, I can imagine everyone wins with that. You're able to bring back best practices. You're able to bring back technologies people are using, approaches, and kind of more current or modern thinking on certain things. And you're also able to take the best parts of the military to these people and let them know what you're about and what the military is about, and they get to know you. So that's very worthwhile. What does it look like when it comes to your work with USAA? So what does your life look like for this year?
Well, so what's really great about this program is that, especially with USAA, is they have completely embraced, they call us TWIs, or Tours in Industry, or the Army and Air Force call it Training with Industry, and we act just like employees. So with the exception of a few things that we were briefed on for ethical reasons, for instance, we don't get paid by the company, we don't get bonuses. If you were a person who just came to USAA, you would think that I'm just a normal employee. So I have projects that I work on. I just finished working on this conference called Digital Milex, where USAA brings in a lot of digital influencers to talk amongst each other and kind of learn what USAA is doing, but also learn what each other is doing. And I was the lead organizer for that. I mean, they've known me for 2 months. I've been there for about 2 months, and they said, here you go, organize this conference. And they just trusted me. I was shocked. One, I don't know that I would have done that had the program been reversed. But secondly, they just believed in us and said, yeah, you're a part of the team. So we get to act as employees, as a part of the team. We get to participate in team meetings. I've been told numerous times there's no meeting, there's no event that I'm not allowed to go to. There's no senior executive meeting that I can't sit in and be a fly on the wall. So they've just been extremely welcoming. And I've heard that throughout the other companies as well. All of us TWs talk amongst each other to see what's happening, like what's happening at Apple, what's happening at LinkedIn, without getting into proprietary information. But many of us have been put on teams. Some of us travel across the country and across the world to work on projects with these companies. So they've completely integrated us. We're not interns. We're definitely like full-time employees.
That's great. I mean, I'm not alone probably in this sentiment, but I have so much love for USAA as a company, and they have been so great to work with. I feel like it's one of the few companies where I'm an active evangelist in terms of talking about it, and I just can't imagine working in that environment, because they seem to be a company where they're consistently best in class, and so to learn from that environment, it sounds like they're learning from peers as well of how to stay the best. And so that must be an incredible learning opportunity.
It is. And it's also made me really appreciate what it's like to work for an organization. I mean, I do with the Navy, but outside of the Navy, we expect the military to conform to these ideals of honor, courage, commitment. But it is really interesting and quite frankly heartening to find an organization that also wants to live up to similar ideals. Mm-hmm. The amount of angst that goes on at USAA about making sure that members are well taken care of is astounding to me. I mean, I've banked there for about 16 years, but I didn't realize all of the things that they do without me knowing to try to take care of me. They start every meeting with their mission. That's crazy in a way, but crazy amazing. And I remember just asking two retired PAOs that work there, and I asked them, is this for real? Like, are you guys really this awesome? Is everybody here really this concerned? And they're like, yeah, this is for real, because they get it. You know, as a veteran, you know, it's great to serve, but there is sort of like a hard edge to it. And so coming to USAA, I say it's like all of the best parts of the military without any of the yelling. So it's really a wonderful place to work. It's the first time, you know, outside of the military, and I've been out of the military before, but it's the first organization outside of the military where I've felt that sense of service, where I felt like I was doing something bigger than myself, which is one of the reasons why I came back to the Navy. Mm. I can't say enough about them. It makes me, you should feel, at least in my opinion, very safe and very secure that your money is with USAA, because the most banks are trying to think of ways to like charge your funds. And, you know, at least for me, USAA is thinking of ways to help you save money. So that's just me as a member. And just seeing the process behind that and the integrity behind that has been really, quite frankly, motivating.
I'm curious. I know you've only been there for 2 months now, but when I think of USAA and I think of like the quality of customer care that they have, you mentioned one thing that they do, which is starting each meeting with a mission statement. Anything else that jumps out to you so far of things that you've seen them do that helps breed that environment of love and support and care for the customer?
Well, I'll point out two things. The first is that they spend a good amount of time onboarding new employees. They want everyone to understand, here's what we're about, here's our values, here's our culture. And I went through that onboarding, and it was very helpful because it helped me to understand, okay, this is what the team is all about. I don't know that I'd done that with other corporations, but USAA takes that really seriously, to the point that they have an entire facility dedicated to that. And they do a specific class. I teach one of those classes now, Military 101, because they want their employees to understand what it's like to be in the military. Again, remember, 75% of these folks have never served in the military or don't have a close tie. So having, you know, when you call USAA and someone says, hello, Lieutenant Nasiri, that person may have never served in the military, but yet they're calling you by your rank, because USAA teaches them that, because they want to show you the utmost respect, which is fantastic. I think that an organization would go that far to take care of their members really says something about it. And the second thing that really stands out to me is that they also want to be better. They actively look for ways to make themselves better and encourage that in their employees. It's something that I've definitely noticed and have, you know, mentioned to my superiors in the Navy about what USAA is doing to try to make themselves more agile, faster, better for their members. And I think when I decide to get out of the Navy, one of the things I'm going to look for when I go for an organization is an organization that, one, cares about its employees, and they do a lot for their employees. It's really awesome. But one that also cares about becoming better for their customers.
Yeah, I've honestly thought, because I guess I've been with them for 16 years as well, and I just remember when I started seeing them in Business Week or one of those things. Mm-hmm. They just continuously are on the cover for best customer support, and I just kept on waiting for things to go downhill. And I was even telling a friend, because you know, with my company, I work with a couple different banks, mm-hmm. and USAA is consistently the best mobile app. They're just like, mm-hmm. always at the forefront, and it's cool to see that as an organization, they continue to stay ahead of the curve.
Yeah, and it's funny because I'm like, oh, this is going to sound like a USAA love fest, and it kind of is. We have the military officers enlisted folks, because the Army does send enlisted folks as well, who are working there this year. We're all like, oh, this is gonna be hard when we leave, because it's just such a nurturing and encouraging environment. But I definitely plan on bringing that kind of environment back to the Navy, and that's why the Navy sent me there, to learn how they do that, so that I can bring some of those elements back to our own organization.
That's great. That's great. And one thing I wanted to ask you about was, so you've done this transition to civilian life before, and I'm wondering what that process was like the first time and kind of what it's like being back in the military now.
Well, so if you want to watch a poster child for how not to get out of the military, then you should look at my first transition. Because this is back in 2008, and yes, they had the internet then, but it wasn't as a ubiquitous part of my life as it is now. I can remember thinking to myself, what's Facebook? And I'm a PAO, but it wasn't as big. It didn't really pick up till maybe 2010, 2011. So all I really had was my transition, my TAPS class. I would say for a lot of your listeners today there is like a wealth of resources to help you decide how to exit the military service. So, but I'll tell you, I started back in 2007. I met my husband. I didn't know he was going to be my husband at the time. I was sort of thinking about getting out, but I was wavering back and forth. And I'll tell you what clinched it for me was I just remember talking to this commander, and he had 2 years left, and literally it just felt like he was just like gripping on for dear life. He could just gut through those last 2 years. He's at the Pentagon and just hating the job that he was in. And I thought, oh my gosh, I do not want to be that bitter commander hanging on for 20 years for a retirement, letting my life pass me by. So that had originally been my onus for, I want to leave. It's time to go. The problem is, Justin, is I didn't have a network. I had no idea what I really wanted to do. I just thought I'd work in communications. I'm doing air quotes for people who can't see me. And I just thought, I'll be honest, there's this thing, especially if you're a Naval Academy graduate or an Academy graduate in general, where people kind of pump you up and say, oh, you've got such great skill sets and you're a leader and people are going to want to hire you right away and you're so much more valuable. Well, you do have skill sets and you are a leader, but that does not translate automatically in the civilian world. So I got out, sort of had a plan, and I was moving to Wisconsin because my husband had accepted a job there. So by luck, and I do mean by luck, I stumbled into a small PR firm, and that was my first job. But I got that job, and you're going to laugh when you hear why I got that job. They saw on my resume I was a naval officer. I still hadn't translated my resume quite as well as I should. But they saw that I was a naval officer, and they thought, oh, we have this really mean, nasty client, and she's probably tough because she's in the military, so she could probably handle this client. Well, joke's on them. Oh, man. Just because you're in the military doesn't mean you're super tough, but they gave me this client, and I will say that I've been in the workforce now for 15 years. Between military and civilian, this was the worst person I've ever worked for in my life. I was shocked that someone could treat you that way. Because when you're in the military, even if people treat you badly, there is like a left and right boundary, and there are some, you know, steps that you can take to combat that. But this guy, when you're working for a client, that was the first lesson I learned as a civilian. When you're working for a client, if that client fires you or you mess up that relationship, you're not getting paid. That was a big eye-opener for me. So like I said, didn't know a whole lot, got out, but didn't know a whole lot about being a civilian. And oh, by the way, I grew up in a military family, and then I went immediately at 17 years old into the military, so I never in my life paid for health insurance. That's a huge shock.
Oh,
I remember telling my husband, oh, I have a stomach ache. I'm just going to go to the hospital. And he said, well, our insurance hasn't kicked in yet. And I said, what are you talking about? And he's like, oh, my gosh, don't you know we have to pay for insurance? I didn't know that. I know that sounds so – people are probably going to laugh at me about that. But if you grew up in a military family and you immediately went to the military, the idea of paying for insurance – I remember this is 2008. It didn't make sense. So I had to learn the hard way, oh, I don't have insurance and have to pay for that. So that's just something that I learned. So don't do what I did. I would highly recommend people research what it's like to get out of the military. So I got out, you know, I got this first job. And remember, I say it's 2008. So what happened in 2008? Stock market crash. So another thing not to do is when you're planning your to get out, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't get out, but I might have delayed it a bit if I had read the tea leaves. So I get out, and my husband started a new job in Wisconsin. And of course, at the first of the year, they let him go. A lot of people got let go. So we moved back to DC for an opportunity I had to go work in Deloitte because we needed health insurance. We needed to have these basic things to live. And I got a job with Deloitte, and we did well. And as a contractor, and as you all know, contracts come and go. And then I had a buddy who worked at Gallup, and he was building a government communications team and thought I might be a good fit. So he told me that I should apply, and I got the role. And then I got to work for Gallup, which was an amazing opportunity. I learned so much about polling and about how to use data and research. After that, one of my mentors was John Kirby. He was my old boss. And I went over to dinner at his house, and he said, you know, I think there's stuff still in the basement, Nicole. You should consider coming back to the Navy. I said, I'm done. I don't need to. But he had awakened something in me. And if I was honest, one of the reasons I came back was I missed that service before self. And I would have been the person who had told you there's no way I would miss that. But there is something to be said, Justin, about working for an organization that has a higher purpose than just making money. It's something that I will now always look for when I decide to work for someone or work for a team, is what is your larger purpose? Is it just to make money? And making money is fine. I want to make money. You need money to live. But getting up every day, doing the hard jobs, part of the reason I do that in the Navy is because I know I'm serving a purpose bigger than myself. And service and sacrifice mean something to me, especially for country. So it's one of the reasons I came back. So I did. I came into the reserves because I thought, all right, I'll go into the reserves. I didn't think I would get to come back on active duty. One, it's really hard, and my paperwork was all screwed up. It was a nightmare. So, side note, if you think about getting out and you think, oh, I'll just get back in, it is really, once you leave, it's extremely hard to come back. I got very lucky again. There's that luckiness that I had. By chance, the year group that I, because I have some broken service, the year group I came back into was lacking in PAOs. And that's the only way I got in, because if you want to come back, it's hard. Then you want to come back as a PAO, my God. It's very difficult because of year groups and manning and numbers. Because once the Navy says goodbye to you, they just assume you're not coming back. So it's difficult to get a billet. But I got a billet, thank goodness. And my husband was overjoyed because he's never served in the military, but he thinks I was crazy to get out in the first place. So I came back in and then promptly deployed two more times and then got a master's.
It makes it even more impressive to realize the tour, the fellowship that you're doing right now, to think that you came back with that big gap. And I imagine it's quite competitive to get it. And to think that with that gap and with all of this, you were still selected for that is really incredible.
Well, when I came back, I felt like I had something to prove. I definitely wanted to show them, you know, thank you for bringing me back. I'm going to promptly go on deployment to prove my worth to the Navy. And also, deployment's kind of fun. It's interesting. You get to be out there. I was doing the things that I came back for, is having an adventure. And my husband is really supportive of that. But you're right. The program is competitive. I was asked to do it. I'm the first public affairs officer from the Navy to do this program. So I'm blazing a trail here, so to speak. My admiral approached me about it. She thought I would be a good fit, and I'm grateful for it. And the 37 people who have been chosen, they are at the top of their game from all walks across the Navy. So I'm proud to be the first to do it, and I have gotten some calls from folks who are also interested in it. There's a 3-year payback after you do this one year, but I think it's totally worth it. It's totally worth it. The amount of experiences, just the chance to live and do something with USAA. I mean, but it could have been Apple. It could have been LinkedIn. That's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. There's no way I was going to turn that down.
Wow. What about, I'm just wondering, now that you're back in the military, I can only imagine if I was back in the military right now, how differently I would go about things. And there was probably a lot that I disliked in the military that persisted outside of the military. You know, it was like a universal thing about just work. And I'm just wondering, have you noticed how your perspective has changed in active duty now for the second time compared to the first time you were in?
Yes. I'm less dramatic, I think, than I was the first time. So let me give you an example. The first time I would say things like, oh, when I get out, I can't wait to have a life. I can't wait to be able to go to the movies on Sunday night. I can't wait to do all these things that I thought that was being prevented from being done because I was on active duty. And it turns out you still can't do those things when you get out. I don't know about you, Justin, but I bet you, since you started your own company, you've worked twice as hard than you might have if you were on a ship. Life, working is hard. Doing anything worthwhile and being in a world-class organization, it doesn't matter if it's the military or if it's Google or any of those high-level organizations, or if you're starting your own business, you're going to work hard. And that's something I didn't know before I left the military. The second thing is I have perspective. With regard to understanding that all large organizations have bureaucracy. I worked at Deloitte. There's a Deloitte in every city, major city in America. I'm working at USAA. Even as amazing as USAA is, there's still that somewhat internal politics. There's still that bureaucracy. There's still that kind of churn. Because anytime you're in a large organization with a lot of people, you're going to get a lot of different personalities, and the organization can't go as fast as you would like. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, when you're small, you're more agile, you're leaner, and I know organizations want to get to that. But there should be a certain comfort in knowing that, okay, one person can't just, you know, completely wreck an entire organization's worth of work. And I think when people think about the military, you know, and we're not a corporation, but we have a lot of similarities. You know, even at USAA, I remember one of my colleagues was trying to get something done, and she was like, oh, I've got all this paperwork I have to do. It is the same as being in the Navy. So if you're going to go work for a large corporation, it doesn't matter how innovative they are. There's always some type of internal office politics. There's always some type of bureaucracy. And now that I know that, I don't have this perspective of when I get out, the grass is going to be greener. It's not. It's just going to be different. And also, instead of complaining about what I can't do because I'm in the Navy, I decided, what can I do to help the Navy? How can I be the change that I want to see? Because if everyone leaves and says, oh, I'm gonna get out and then I'm gonna start my own company or be able to use my own MacBook and have better IT stuff, well, I hate to break it to you, you're living it's not that easy. You have all types of little, what I call irritants. Just like you have irritants in the Navy, there are irritants in other organizations. You're just trading one set of irritants for another. That doesn't mean you shouldn't get out, but don't expect that you won't get irritants. And I've learned to deal with those a lot better.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, it's sometimes frustrating for me when I do talk and reconnect with friends who are still on active duty. And, you know, I get the complaining, and I get that because I did that as well. But so much of what they complain about, I would have the same complaints, and friends from business school have the same complaints. Mm-hmm. And so I love the way you put that, because that's not a sign to stay in. But right. If that's the reason you're leaving, like it may not be the exact same BS that you're putting up with, but it's going to be lesson in life. There's some required amount of BS we all have to deal with our job. And there's just going to be, maybe it could be a better fit, but it's not going to all go away. And there's still going to be a lot of that frustration.
Yeah. As my husband says, jerks live everywhere. Yeah. You know, if you think that you're going to, you know, you're just going to encounter a different type of jerk, maybe a more passive aggressive jerk. It doesn't matter, but jerks live everywhere. And so you just have to learn how to thrive and how to make a difference in whatever organization you are. And if you're going to leave, and I wholeheartedly believe whether you're at 2 years or you're at 20 years, we all leave the service eventually. Like, they're going to kick me out one day. Like, some people go kicking and screaming. But eventually, Nicole Schwegman will have to take off her uniform one last time and go back to where we all came from, which is being a civilian. And I'm going to have to learn how to deal with that. So if you are leaving the Navy because you think it's going to somehow solve all your problems and make all your dreams come true, well, I've been out there. And all of the problems that I had in the Navy, they just followed me out outside. And then I realized some of it was me and not necessarily the job. So that's really what getting out and coming back in. And I will also say, as a side note, it's also made me appreciate health insurance to the max. I had a realization one day when I was out that I was one broken leg away from bankruptcy. I don't think people talk about that enough, but health insurance is important. And we get pretty good health insurance. I know everyone jokes about getting vitamin M, but when you really think about it, we get pretty good insurance in the Navy. It's not perfect. No health insurance is, but the realization that I could break my leg when I didn't have any insurance and it would take all of my money and probably loans to pay off my medical bills was a very scary thought. So it's just something that I didn't appreciate before, but I completely appreciate now, especially as I move towards retirement.
Oh man. I think that's spot on. And that's one of the things I wanted to ask about too, is as you think about, like you said, that second transition for you, that's going to come no matter what eventually, how do you think about approaching that transition differently then, now that you've gone through it once? Or maybe a different way of looking at that question is like, what would you do differently? I don't know. Either way, what you think you'll do differently now or what you wish you had done differently the first time?
Well, I've written some advice of what I would have given Nicole Schwegman 8 years ago, what she should have done, and kind of advice that I think that your folks might be able to use now. And the first thing that I have been doing and that I would implore other people to do is grow your network. It's never too late to start. Now, I know networking is a dirty word to some people. They don't want to come off as slimy or they want something. Every veteran who has gotten out, including a 3-star admiral who works at USA, has all said to me, Nicole, you should be networking. You should be growing your list of contacts. And it doesn't have to be very transactional. If you're in the military or you have served in the military, you have this distinct advantage that so many other people don't have. Vets help vets. It just happens. There hasn't been one vet who has called me up or emailed me that I haven't bent over backwards to try and help, because we have a connection. You have this unwritten connection already. So use that. Vets help vets. In fact, I can't tell you how many people have told me to call them or let me link into you. So that's the first thing, is grow your network. And specifically, reach out to people in career fields you're interested in. I call this trying out different careers. So right now, I'm trying out user design. That's something I think I want to move into after I leave the Navy. I find it interesting. I stumbled into it by chance and fell in love with it. And so I'm trying on that career. So what does that mean? Well, I've been doing informational interviews with UX designers to see, what do you do on a daily basis? What's your life like? And I've been doing it at USAA, and they encourage that. That's one of the things about the tourism industry, is they want you to get all around the company. So I have this wonderful opportunity each week to go and find someone and meet someone new and say, hey, what do you do for the company? Do you like it? That sort of thing. The second thing I say is take a course. I took a UX course with General Assembly. I went up to New York for a week, and I learned how to do user design and user interface design. And it was fantastic. And I got to meet people. Nobody in that course was in the military, but I met all of these people who were A, working in that field or wanted to work in that field. That's an entire classroom full of potential networks. I also say is try to do something that you're thinking about doing on the side. Like, I knew a friend, he wanted to be a chef. So on his weekends, he would work with a catering company and he was their prep cook. That's what he did, to see if he liked it. Turns out he didn't like it. I could have told him that, because I used to work at a restaurant. But he was trying on a career, because I think a lot of times, especially on active duty, especially when you're out on the ocean and life is pretty hard, we romanticize life and careers that we think sound cool. Like, for instance, you know, I've romanticized, oh, I think it would be amazing to work at Google. But what I probably don't know is people probably work 12 to 14 hours a day at Google. You know, all you hear is all the perks. You don't hear about the meetings that go till 7 at night. We romanticize these careers. You know, I think everybody romanticized being the greeter at Walmart after they retire. It ain't happening. But we so find out. And the other thing I would tell myself to do is get a non-military mentor. Somebody who can help you translate your experience in the military into corporate speak. Because we do have a lot of great experience, But if nobody understands what you really do, like everyone doesn't understand what's a company commander. You command, like if you say company commander to someone at USAA and they're not a prior military, they'd be like, you took care of a company. You were in charge of a company, like a business, like a corporation. They don't always get that. So, and you should be, I would have started doing that from the very beginning, from my first job. Every time I finished a job, I would have I should have been translating what I did in the military into corporate and plain language speak so that people could understand what I'm doing. And I didn't have to wait until the end of my, 6 years to try and wrestle with that beast. You should be doing that all along. You should always be trying to figure out how to translate what you do into plain language. So those are some of the things I would do.
I love it. And I love that thought of trying on a career. And I love that just image of, anytime I go, not that I buy a lot of clothes, but anytime I do, I always try it on. And I just kind of, there's so many things that look good on the store model that don't look good on me. And I love that sense of just giving it a little bit of a try, getting a little bit of a taste. I love, and I'll put a link in the show notes for General Assembly, but I love that you tried that. You had a week where, yes, of course, it's not the same as doing it for a year, and mm-hmm. it probably gave you enough of a feel to say, yes, I want more, or no, this isn't right for me. And mm-hmm. it can save you a tremendous amount of time of wasting a career search around something that you might not like. So I think that's really, really great advice.
Exactly. And I tried data science and it didn't feel right to me. One, I'm not as good at math as I would like to be. I would have had to take a lot more math. I'm not really interested in that. And I tried, coding. I've tried a lot of different jobs because I know that eventually I probably want to work in the tech space. So I've tried on those different roles that tech companies are usually looking for. And the one that seems to fit the most, that meshes most with my current skills of public relations, public affairs, is UX, because they do a lot of similar things with regards to talking to people and making people understand complex things in a really simple and easy way. So that's what I would say to anybody, is try on your career. It's free, or it's just a little bit of money. You don't have to, take it on forever. It's just super important. I would also recommend, one of the things that I should have did that I didn't do is I didn't have a realistic, and we talked about this earlier, a realistic idea of what life is like outside the military. Now, I know in TAP class they say, oh, well, you need to make this much money to equate to what you're making as a lieutenant or a lieutenant commander. You need to have this kind of job skills. That's very basic. You need to do more than that. You need to, like, you try on a career, you need to try on life. So, for example, I didn't realize, I knew it, but the pay of a lieutenant, it's pretty nice. And so when you first leave, you don't expect to make lieutenant pay when you first leave the service. I didn't. I made a lot less. I had to take a big step down in pay just to get the job that I got, because one, there weren't that many jobs around, and two, I was unproven. I was unproven in the civilian role, and my experience didn't translate well. Like, remember I said they only hired me because they thought I could deal with a mean, nasty client, not because of my PR skill, if that tells you anything. That's how desperate they were to try and appease this client. So be realistic. That's okay, and it's okay to take a step back, because if you're good, just like you were great in the military, you'll be good enough and you'll climb back up and you'll catch up. But the first job you get may not be, the one that pays you the exact same thing as when you got out. And especially if you retire, that's a lot of retirees have a problem with that. It's why I think a lot of times people really start to get nervous, because you spent 20 years, you're a captain in the Navy, and people say, yes, sir, and yes, ma'am. And then you go to this civilian organization, everyone's like, hey, Jim. and it's so jarring. You've spent this lifetime of being respected and everyone immediately understands that you're one of the important people in the room. And then you go somewhere else, and not only are you not the most important person in the room, you might not be making the most in the room. And that's so jarring to so many retirees. And I know this because many of them told me that at USAA, how jarring it was to be in charge from driving a ship, and then all of a sudden they come into USAA, and like a 25-year-old, you know, kid is their boss or their supervisor, and they have to prove themselves, and some people don't make it because they can't adjust to that. So be realistic, not only just money wise of how much it costs, but you're going to have to take a step back. And I've prepared myself for that, you know, and if you can prepare yourself for that and say, hey, you know what? In every industry, you have to kind of take an entry-level job or start a little bit at the bottom. You'll build yourself back up because those skills that you got from the military are going to make you faster and make you better. But be humble. Don't expect to come out and to have anyone understand what it means for you to have commanded a U.S. Navy warship. Most people aren't. They aren't going to fathom it. It sounds cool. They're going to think Star Trek or Starship Enterprise, but they won't really have a grasp for that. They won't know how much you can work. A lot of the military folks who I work with who are on active duty at USAA, we always say to the employees, oh, you don't know how hard I can work. I can take on a lot more than this. And I've actually learned to stop saying that because it's almost – yeah, so can they, but they just have learned how to pace out their work, and I'm just sitting here trying to prove myself. I don't need to do that. I can take a break. I don't need to work like I'm on deployment. And so just getting used to that and learning how to transition in that way and asking your friend to have done it, that's something I wish I had done, and I didn't do that.
So you said a lot that was great there. One thing that just really stuck out to me was when you were talking about public affairs to UX. And I thought that was such a brilliant switch that I wouldn't have made, where I love the way you talked about how public affairs, you're basically explaining to a different audience something and getting them to understand something. And so if I was in your shoes, I would be thinking like, okay, civilian public affairs or lots of things that are directly in line. And what you did is you took that skill set and you flipped it in a way that was really clever of like, yes, I've worked with a lot of UX people, and you said it's exactly true. You're explaining to a different audience how to do something, how to know something, how to get information from something. And so I really appreciated that. That was like a very clever way to take a skill set, but not take it to a tangential level rather than like doing X in the Navy, therefore I'll do X in the civilian world. It's like, no, I have this skill set and I can apply that in so many different ways in a different environment. I think that was really cool.
Yeah, and you know, I bring it up because I hear a lot of the folks that you interview, they've gone to, you know, business school. They're very impressive people. I'm always like, oh, I don't know if I'm impressive enough to be on this podcast. These people clearly have their stuff together. You know, so many business school people. And so what I would say to those people who are listening to your podcast who are like, oh my gosh, I have to go to business school? No, you don't. You don't have to go to business school. You just need to know how to apply what you know to the situation at hand. You know, that thing you do all the time in the military that you don't know you're doing is taking a special set of skills and applying them to the situation. You would think military people would know how to easily transition because every time you go to a new set of orders, that's a transition. You have to adapt to the politics in the office. You have to adapt to your new boss. Yeah, there's some things that are the same, but I've never been to two commands that were exactly the same. And I've always been asked to do things that I have no qualifications for whatsoever. I've always been put outside my comfort zone, and I had to adapt and figure it out. It's the same thing. Okay, this is a job. What am I good at? What can I bring to the table? And how can I adapt? And I'll bring up one other thing in regards to trying on jobs and figuring out what you like. I did a startup weekend a couple of weeks ago, and I was scared to death to go because I thought, oh, these are going to be a bunch of 25-year-old bros, and I got nothing in common with them. I don't know how to code. I'm not a very good designer yet, so I don't really want to offer that skill out there because there's no way I can whip up something in less than 48 hours. What do I know how to do? All I know how to do is, air quotes, lead. So I went in there anyway because my husband was like, don't wuss out, go, you paid $15, at least go get some free food and listen to the pitches. And I ended up having one of the best times. And I learned, oh, okay, I do have something to contribute to a team, but I had to go in real humble and figure out what my role was. And a lot of my role was interviewing customers. I was good at that. That was that public affairs skill. It was finding people to try and use our app. It was organizing the work. It was going to get coffee and donuts for everybody. I had skill sets to offer to a budding startup. And so I mentioned that is that other people who are listening to this, they should absolutely go and do things like that. Try it. It's a weekend. It's one weekend. So what? If you never want to do a startup, it doesn't matter. What it's teaching you is how to interact with people who are not military and make your skills translatable to people who you most likely will be working with in the future, whether it's in 2 years or in 20 years. Learn how to work with people outside of the military. Learn how to translate your skills and then take that back and use it while you're still in the military. This can go back and forth both ways. It doesn't have to be one or the other. And it's something that I think is a value add to the Navy, me doing that startup weekend. It helped me to think outside of the box and how to, you know, startups are essentially like divisions. You don't have a lot of money, you don't have a lot of time, and you never have enough people, but you still have to achieve the mission. Same way with startups. Never enough time, money, or people, or resources, but you still have to launch, right? So, same thing.
Yeah, I love it. I love that attitude, too, of just kind of jumping in with your... jumping in head first and not holding back on that.
Surface, surface, surface.
Thanks for listening. Before you go, three important announcements. First, if you believe in what I'm doing and believe in supporting veterans in their careers, please, please, please help me spread the word. The best way I know to do that right now is by taking 18 seconds to write a review on iTunes. It would mean a lot. Second, based on my interviews, I'd advise any and all veterans to look at servicetoschool.org and the American Corporate Partners. Both are completely free for veterans and give you a lot of great resources for your education or professional life, respectively. Third, there are a ton of other great interviews, resources, and data at beyondtheuniform.io. Check it out, share it with your friends, and drop me a line if you have any feedback because I'd love to hear from you. Thanks, and see you on the next interview.